Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Gets to Giannis. He will fire up a three, and he nails it. Giannis, straight on, has scored five straight for the Bucks. And how about Antetokounmpo in that spot?
Bucks talk starts now.
Second free throw misses. Rebound controlled by Giannis. There's a whistle. Was there a foul? No. That is the ball game. It goes out of bounds.
And now, live from Fiserv Forum, here's Justin Garcia.
Well, disappointment for the Bucks tonight, who come up short against the Sacramento Kings. And a game where not a whole lot went your way after the opening quarter tonight. You had an offense that exploded through that first quarter. 47 points, hot shooting. We mentioned 60% from the floor, 70% from the floor, 60% from three. The Bucks hit seven of their first nine threes to start the game, but it wasn't even a cold shooting night. That pace, as anyone would expect, started to fall off, and your defense did not look anything like this version of the Bucks defense that we've seen through the first five games of the season. Doc Rivers said after the game, you know, DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine, especially that duo, they were getting whatever they wanted, especially the final second half, the final two quarters of this game. So this defense just did not play good enough to win. There were a number of things that we pointed to, certainly some questionable officiating and some calls. I think the ones that really sting and haunt you the most were that DeMar DeRozan foul that he drew against Gary Trent Jr., where, you know, it appeared to be one of those James Harden hook the arm and draw the contact, and because you're able to sell it, you get the whistle and you go to the line. There was a couple of those types of plays. Doc said after the game as well, you know, our staff looked at it and we thought Giannis was fouled on the lead-up to that rebound on the final play of the game. But his point is what I know Dave Kane made this and myself, we said at the end of the game, there were some of those things you could point to. The bottom line is, this was not a game the Bucks played good enough to win. 855-616-1620. The Signing Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk as the Bucks fall at home for the first time this season and now dropped a 4-2 on the season. You wondered about the potential for a trap game, too. I don't know that that's what we saw, but that was another one of the messages that came across from Doc Rivers after the game. We'll get into that and take your thoughts on not only tonight, what we've seen from this group so far, and a big one, Monday night in Indy. We will do so after this on Bucks Talk.
Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
135-133 final tonight inside of Fiserv. It had some technical issues in that first segment. It sounded terrible. I'm aware of it. We apologize. We got it sorted out now. In many ways, it felt like what we saw tonight in those final three quarters, but the Bucks come up short against the Sacramento Kings. A game that, look, I'm sure if you came to the game, if you're getting set for this, you circle it and said 4-1 versus 1-4. Man, the good vibes that have surrounded this Bucks team, they're going to keep rolling and take down the Kings. Not to play the on any given night cliche, but it's a Kings team that has Zach LaVine who can go off. So here's the thing, too. My anxiety is not the right way to put it, but one of the things you look through, you comb through the numbers, and you file away coming into this one and think, boy, I hope we don't have to use this, is the propensity to score down the stretch that this Kings team has. Zach LaVine had the third most double-digit fourth-quarter outings a season ago. DeMar DeRozan, since entering the NBA, is number three in fourth-quarter scoring. So you look at this group and you say, this is a Kings team that played a decent amount of clutch games a season ago. Those two guys can score. Man, I hope it doesn't come down to that. It didn't really. You know, those two, Zach LaVine was cheating up before that, but the Kings overall just hit the biggest shots and made the biggest plays of the game to seal this one. Marty and Cudahy, you kick things off here as we go to the phone lines. You're up first. Well, Marty dropped. All right, 855-616-1620 is the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight as the Bucks come up short against the Sacramento Kings. Doc Rivers didn't sugarcoat it after the game. The defense was not good. And I think the jarring part of all of this was
the first quarter versus the last three quarters were basically two different games and two different styles on both ends of the floor for the Bucks. There was ball movement. They were getting paint touches. They were getting into the lane, penetrating, spraying the ball out from there, or finishing at the rim. And they were playing strong defense against this Kings team. And then a little bit before the second quarter started, but if we focus on the final three quarters especially, it just evaporated. And the Kings were the team that was doing that. The Kings were getting to the free throw line. There's two other things, numbers-wise, we got to track and keep an eye on throughout the course of this season. That's free throw shooting and rebounding for this Bucks team. You didn't bring in bad free throw shooters, but you lost two excellent free throw shooters in Damian Lillard and Brooke Lopez. It's a Bucks team that has just struggled to be efficient at the free throw line so far. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Marty is back. Marty and Cudahy, you're up first.
Hey, good evening. Last year I would call the show quite often, and I would use the same phrase again and again about how I just felt like our team was old and slow. So, to be optimistic, I love the athleticism. I love this roster. I guess over the course of 82 games, we're going to have some stinkers. You know, we do rely on one superstar to do a lot. To me, I give a lot of credit to Doc. He's developed Rollins. He's developed Green. And I would really like to see him continue to hopefully develop another couple of components of the team. Today, I felt like when Sabonis was killing us on the boards, I am wondering why Sims didn't get any action today, because I think Portis was struggling on the defensive side, the rebounding side. So, for me, it's not a great loss, but if you give up 135 points, you're not going to win anyway. So, lessons be learned, but I do think Sims has a role in this team, and I think he's going to help today.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Marty. I mean, it's one of 82 games, right? So we have the same mindset there. Urko Sims, too, Doc, I forget, it was before the Knicks game when you had New York reporters who obviously covered Jericho last season, asked about him and let it off, too. I know he's not in your rotation and he's not a big piece of what you're doing, but, and Doc quickly kind of pushed back and said he's going to play. He's going to have a role here. You get the sense, like, one of the other things to, you know, with this team being different, that's one of the other things here for all of us is you changed coaches, right? More that I think than we would have liked these past handful of years. You changed coaches, and you made the big change of Jrue Holiday out for Damian Lillard in. But other than that, the skeleton of this team remained the same. Like, the way they operated, the way they played offensively, basically what they did defensively, save for the first four games of the Adrian Griffin era, it was the same Bucks. There were different faces, but for the most part, you're doing the same stuff. That is not the case this season. You know, when you make a change as radical as they did, to your point, the athleticism has been majorly upgraded for this team. And the way they initiate their offense and everything else, like, it is not Giannis with a stagger partner. It is not Giannis's turn and then Damian Lillard's turn, which, as much as we wanted to push back and say, you know, I don't think that's the case, it's painfully obvious that was the case the last 2 years. So everything about this is different. It's going to take some time to really start to click. I think what stands out the most so far is it's a competitive team. There's athleticism there. There's a lot of shooting, right? We knew that. That's one thing that has not changed. And you wondered, okay, if you're going to take more threes, how much is the efficiency going to drop? As we've seen, not at all. So all of these things, how you start to find secondary actions offensively and who is consistently going to be your second leading scorer, is that going to eventually become Ryan Rollins? Those things are going to be a work in progress throughout the course of the season. I don't want to be prisoner of the moment and, you know, get too high on a five-game sample size, but I was high on this group coming into the season. I thought in terms of their seeding, they were probably going to finish about where they did a season ago, but I thought they were going to hit their over for win totals. No, I didn't think it was going to be like a plus 10. Depending on where you looked, it was anywhere from 41.5 to 43.5. But I thought this team was going to win around 45, 46 games. It may still end up being that case. And look, if they go 500 the rest of the way, they're going to hit their over. But I think one of the things that, you know, we just kind of needed to see that I did not take into account is the youth of this team. And we mentioned how competitive they are. I mean, tonight, case in point, you did not deserve to be in or win this game with the way that you played for the final 36 minutes. You lose by 2 points and you had a chance. You know, we can call out some of the individual calls and the officiating throughout this game. It was certainly questionable at best. But despite all of that, you had a chance. You gave yourself a chance to be in this one. I wondered about the trap game mentality because of, you know, the schedule that you had leading into this. And really, you could start with the Raptors game because we heard a lot of noise from Toronto about, hey, this team is built to win now, and they're trying to win. They brought in Brandon Ingram. They're going to be competitive. They think they're going to finish in front of the Bucks. You had that. You had a Cavaliers team that dominated you all through the season last year that you were competitive with when clearly not full strength. Then you had the two big matchups that were tests that you won with the Knicks and the Warriors. So you had all of that leading into a game with this team that's currently 1-4. And then on the other end of it, you have, oh, by the way, not only Miles Turner's return to Indy, but a team that has been your rival for the past, what, two seasons? You have that same Raptors team afterwards. You have an NBA Cup game 1 week, 6 days from now, Friday here in Milwaukee. You got a matchup with the Rockets. So, like, this was the one that stood out on the schedule of the, like, oh, yeah. So I was curious how much of a quote-unquote trap game this would be. But I think one of the things you see, too, is I'm not going to say those don't happen. It's not as frequent with young teams and with teams with guys that are competing for spots. Like, you oftentimes see those trap games with veteran teams, oddly enough, because those are the teams that know, like, this really matters in the playoffs. And for that reason alone, in the athleticism and again, the fight and spirit and competitiveness that we've seen from this team, the shooting that's there even with Giannis off the floor, it does leave me even higher on this team than where I was coming into the season. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. We mentioned it a couple of times already. Monday night, Miles Turner returns to Indianapolis. There is one pretty big comp that's out there, but what do we expect Miles Turner to be greeted with? We'll get into that conversation next.
The Round Ball Repartee returns. This is Bucks Talk.
Bit of a dud tonight. It's the Bucks fall short against the Sacramento Kings, 135 to 133. Both teams had six players score in double figures. One of the bigger differences, though, was Sacramento had four of their six guys score 20-plus points. Yeah, 31 from Zach LaVine, 29 from DeMar DeRozan, and then 24 apiece from Domantas Sabonis and Dennis Schroeder. I mean, really, that was all their offense. Six players accounted for the 128 points. The other two guys to score were Keon Ellis, and you almost felt bad for him here, but the Kings didn't really have much in terms of bigs to throw out there, and they ended up starting Dylan Cardwell, a two-way rookie at center tonight against Giannis Antetokounmpo and Miles Turner. Played 5 minutes and scored 2 points. That was the other kind of, again, 26 points is not a bad night, but I think we all assumed Giannis would feast a little more at that front court of Dylan Cardwell, Drew Eubanks. That's it. Domas Sabonis. But it took a while for Giannis to get going. And nine of those 26 came at the free throw line. So I mentioned this game, maybe it's a trap game and you circle it given what was in front of it and what's after it. What is immediately after it is your first matchup of the season against the Indiana Pacers. Now, to say the Indiana Pacers are going through it is a massive understatement. And, you know, ironically enough, they are midway through the third quarter in Indy, and they are currently up six on the Golden State Warriors, 73-67. But This is an Indiana Pacers team that obviously lost Miles Turner. They are playing without Tyrese Halliburton, having suffered that Achilles tear in Game 7 of the NBA Finals. And it's an injury report that is growing by the day for the Indiana Pacers. They discovered Obi Toppin was playing on a broken foot. He had to have surgery, and they've announced he's going to be out until February. Benedict Mathurin has a great toe sprain. He's out. TJ McConnell has a left hamstring strain. He's out. Andrew Nembhard is dealing with a shoulder strain. He's out. So you're looking at basically the only two regulars and guys that you really leaned on during that run to the NBA Finals a season ago that are available and able to play for you right now are Aaron Nesmith and Pascal Siakam. So they're going through it with this 0-5 start. But we've seen a lot of chatter from Miles Turner throughout the course of the offseason. And look, Bucks fans were very quick to thump their chests and dig in on it as well. We've heard Miles Turner take, I don't know if I would call it veiled shots. I was talking about it with a local indie reporter the other day. In just, you know, what is this reception going to be? Like, what should we expect to hear? And he kind of said the same thing of like, look, I've known Miles for basically his entire time here in Indy. I know he's a good guy. I don't think he means X, Y, and Z when he's saying these things, but I do think there's some pointed shots that he's taken at the organization. And Pacers fans have not taken too kindly to that. You know, I point blank asked, too, what's the reaction going to be? You know, like, is this going to be a thing where Miles Turner gets the polite golf clap when he's introduced, and then as the game is played, he's booed going forward? This individual told me no. I do think it's probably going to be 50-50 boos. Now, I've talked to other people, and even, you know, the other night we were talking off the air during the broadcast about what it's going to be like. Everyone else that I have talked to outside of Indy thinks, like, this is going to be overwhelming boos that Miles Turner is dealing with. Now, the Pacers are going to do a tribute video for Miles Turner that is going to happen before the game. The Bucks will typically do it during that first timeout in the game. That's when we saw the Chris Middleton video. We've seen one for Drew Holiday when he returned. We saw one for Mike Budenholzer last year. But the Pacers are doing this before the game. And I wonder what that's going to do for the reaction that he's greeted with. But in many ways, it does kind of remind you of something that, you know, Bucks fans, I'm sure there's a Venn diagram of Bucks fans and Brewer fans being one and the same. This reminds you of something that you have already experienced with a different team. So we'll take a look at that, take a look at the other games being played tonight, and this schedule ahead for the Bucks and some of the matchups that they have. Realistically, through 10 games, where do you expect this Bucks team to be now, having seen six of those games being played? And has that number started to grow and change? I just said a couple of minutes ago, my expectations were already, high, sure. I was much higher on this team than others outside of Milwaukee coming into the season, but my expectations have already started to go up. Has the same happened for you? We'll dig into those conversations coming up next.
This is Bucks Talk.
So Miles Turner's return to Indiana is going to happen on Monday. And I said, look, if we are to assume, which I think is a safe assumption, that most Bucks fans are also Brewers fans, is this not something you've already experienced but on the other end? Is this not Craig Counsell leaving the Brewers for the Chicago Cubs? Now, the difference, obviously, Miles Turner wasn't an Indiana kid who grew up there and went on to play for the franchise, but that was the only organization that Miles Turner knew. Drafted by the Pacers in the lottery, played 10 years there, had to deal with hearing his name in trade rumors basically every single year, and eventually it felt like the team and the fan base came around on him. I don't think there was any lead up and having to really hard sell Craig Counsell on the fan base here, but there are roots there for Miles Turner. And you start to really taste this success for Indiana. Run to the conference finals, comes up short against the Boston Celtics. Then you actually make the NBA finals. And I still firmly believe you know, there's two beliefs I have about the championship. What ifs? If Chris Middleton doesn't slip on a wet spot, the Bucks are back-to-back champions in 2022. If Tyrese Halliburton doesn't get injured, the Indiana Pacers win the championship last year. If he doesn't go down a couple of minutes into Game 7, they win that game. And then what happens? Do you let Miles Turner walk for more money if you're an NBA champion, if you're the reigning champion? Even if there are tax concerns? Like, the only team we've seen do that to that level. You can push back and say the Bucks did it with P.J. Tucker. But the only team we've seen do that to that level was the Dallas Mavericks that won in 2011. So that's a big what if for the league, for Miles Turner, for the Milwaukee Bucks. But they ultimately come up short. And whether or not it was losing in the finals or the injury to Tyrese Halliburton, you know, if you read between the lines, the assumption, and I think a safe assumption, is the Pacers just got a little gun-shy after saying, we're going to go under the tax. We're finally going to do this. We're willing to go up to, you know, maybe $30 million a year for Miles Turner. I have talked with a few in Indy and a few of their reporters. I know Eric Name has talked about this. I've talked with him as well, trying to really source and track down the firm answer on what was the offer the Pacers made to Miles Turner. That is still pretty ambiguous. That I think you've heard a couple of different figures thrown around. But I think what I feel strong enough to say is, number one, the Pacers were not willing to go 4 years on Miles Turner. They stopped it at three, and their annual was not going to match what the Bucks were paying him annually. I believe it topped out at about $22 million a year. So you open the door for Miles Turner to leave, and he does. And now, in the months that have followed Miles Turner going to the Bucks, you've seen a lot of, I don't know if I'd say revisionist history, but we've seen more and more of the, yeah, well, he wasn't actually good in the finals, and he actually can't do this, and he can't do that. Would you look at the individual game production? And there's been a lot of Pacers fans, too. I've seen them in my mentions, who will screenshot box scores and send them out to you and say, you're paying $25 million for 5 points. There's a lot of that. And, you know, if we're just viewing that in a vacuum, is the offensive production that Miles Turner has given you in terms of point scoring worth $25 million? No, I don't think anybody would say it is. But as we mentioned, it's everything else that he's brought with. You know, moving the ball, encouraging that, moving without the ball, what he's brought defensively to help out. The Bucks have been the best team at the rim on both ends of the floor. Tonight was interesting. They didn't dominate there against a team that really you should have. But Miles Turner's been a big piece of that in why they've been so efficient, because it's been easy to score at the rim. Partially because of Miles Turner, a lot because of Giannis and Ryan Rollins, but it's also been easy for the Bucks to prevent teams from scoring at the rim, largely because of Miles Turner and also because of Giannis. So, you know, we saw the same thing with Craig Council. And I will say, having had a much closer view of it and following it more closely than every single one of Miles Turner's splits in individual games in Indiana, there's a little more sincerity, and it goes back a little deeper in the case of Craig Council. There were fans that were opposed to the, hey, it's way too analytical, we're doing way too much of this money ball, and yada, yada, yada. Like, you got to play the feel of the game and some of those types of complaints. But the same story. Guy leaves, and not only does he leave, he goes to your rival. I do think it's funny, though, that, you know, I heard, I'm sure we all heard from Pacers and Pacers fans, like, well, this isn't totally a rivalry for us. Like, this team annoys us, sure, but we beat you all the time. We beat you in the NBA Cup 2 years ago. We beat you in the playoffs 2 years in a row. And for it to be a rivalry, you got to see success on both ends. But then Miles Turner leaves, and that almost jump-started the success in terms of how the Pacers view it. And now, in their mind, it is a full-on rivalry. So for that reason alone, I don't think it's going to be any different than all of the instances of Craig Council returning to Milwaukee. You know, think back to the playoffs a couple of weeks ago where Craig Council walks out to the mound he is viciously booed. He's introduced the starting lineups with the Cubs. Same story. I don't think, even with the reputation Pacers fans have of being a polite group, I don't think it's going to be polite on Monday. And I'm frankly curious to see how that impacts Miles Turner. I think it is going to be a lively environment. It is going to be spirited. I'm not going to put it at the level of Kevin Durant returning to Oklahoma City for the first time since leaving, and the cupcake t-shirts and everything else that was happening, or LeBron returning to Cleveland. It's not there, but it's going to be a scene, and I cannot wait to take it in. We'll take a look at the rest of the games being played here, including that Indiana Pacers game. Is this team finally going to get off the schneid and win their first game leading into that matchup? I tell you what, I hope so, because I do not want this Bucks group going into Indiana, where the Pacers are already going to be extra juiced for that, and also doing so 0-6, searching for their first win of the season. So are we moving closer to a Pacers victory tonight against the Warriors? We'll update you on the score coming up after this.
Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
All right, so a tough one tonight for the Bucks. Despite a really strong start, 47 points to open up the game in that first quarter, a quarter again where to say the Bucks were efficient in that first quarter would be a massive understatement. They hang 47 on the Kings. They shoot 71% from the field, 62% on threes, including eight makes. And really, once the Kings made it a one-point game in the lead-up to that, when they kept chipping away in the second quarter, is when you started to dig in and say, okay, I think we got one here. And ultimately, the Kings just make the plays down the stretch and win this game. Okay, so up next, the Pacers. Indiana is now trailing 88-82, and they're headed to the fourth quarter in Indy. So we will see if that is going to be a matchup between the winless Pacers and the Bucks as Miles Turner makes his return to Indy. Monday night, 6 o'clock tip, 5:30 is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We will talk with you then.